So welcome to our second podcast with Dr. Jim. Just one thing I wanted to mention is if you can hear some grunting and groaning and snorting in the background, that is the dog. So don't worry, no one's suffering any kind of heart attacks or anything like that. Although we do have quite a bit of cigar smoke happening already, and it's smelling quite nice in the boys' room. So we're back.
And there are medical professionals around.
Yeah, and there are medical professionals around. So we're back for podcast number two with Dr. Jim. We hope you enjoyed the first podcast. And today we're going to start out with some questions from some of our followers. So we're going to get to those first, and then we're going to talk about a couple of other things that have been happening in Dr. Jim's life and talk about some wine and cigars. And hopefully it'll be a good 30 minutes. So the first question... for Dr. Jim, is thoughts on the Vacuvin wine stopper, why you like it, how long to use it for, and how much it costs. So I believe we did a review on that quite a while back. But Dr. Jim, if you want to give us kind of your thoughts on that particular product.
Vacuvin is probably the main wine stopper that I use. I like it mainly because it does have a click sound when you actually get to a vacuum point. And even with that, you can actually pump more and actually get even more of a seal. We've used it both for red and for white. The difference is that with white will stay longer because you can keep them in the fridge, so they will not oxidize as quickly. Reds will oxidize a little bit faster, so you can keep them for a day or two. White wines you might be able to keep for two or three or up to a week depending on your refrigeration. The only downside to the Vacuvin is that on some bottles with a very large neck, you don't get a complete seal. That's my only downside on the Vacuvin.
Interesting.
And they run about $20 to $40 depending on how many stoppers and come with the kit and whether you get the one that have wine pourers with them.
And I think for those who missed the first podcast, towards the end we ran into some technical difficulties, but I think some advice that you were giving was basically just get a bunch of friends together and don't worry about any kind of wine stopper or wine product. You just drink the whole bottle.
It's better to drink it when you have it open than to store it, but if you have to store it, these products do make them last longer so they don't oxidize.
Nice. Interesting. So, question number two. A little while back, there was a bottle of wine that you had reviewed, and one of the followers has a question as to why you gave that particular wine, which is a Château de Beaucastle 2006 Châteauneuf de Pape, and why you gave that particular wine a rating between 85 and 96, as the first part of his question. The second part of his question was how it tasted, and that he does have this particular wine in his possession, but hasn't opened any up yet. So, are you able to speak to that a little bit, Dr. Jim?
Yeah, actually, the typing was a bit of a typo on that. It should have been 95 to 96 points. Château de Beaucastle is one of the better Châteauneuf de Papes that I... one of my personal favorites. It is one of the only Châteauneuf de Papes that are still made with all the varieties of grapes that are allowed to be put into a Châteauneuf de Pape, which I believe is about 14 different varietals. It has been made by the Perrin family for a long period of time, for many years, and it's regularly rates somewhere between 94 and almost lately there's been several vintages that have been rated at 100 points. It can age for a long time. 10 years is still probably young. If you're going to open it up, decanting for a period of time and tasting it to see how it feels on your palate would be a good idea. One could decant it up to a couple hours. The younger ones even longer, but this wine can age for many, many years.
Okay, well, thank you for the questions. Please, you know, email or tweet your questions. We hope to try to keep on top of as many as we can for Dr. Jim. We certainly appreciate your inquiries. So we'll move on now. What are we drinking today, Dr. Jim?
Today we're having a Côte du Rhône Brunel de la Jardin, which is a Côte du Rhône that we've just opened up. It's a relatively inexpensive at about $16 a bottle, but it has a very good taste to it, a very good body. And it's a GSM blend, so it's a Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre blend. It's made by the same people who make the Chateauneuf de Pape for Chateau de la Gardin. For cigars, today we're having a Partagas number 2, I believe.
Nice.
Series D.
Cuban.
Cuban cigar, yes.
Excellent. And I noticed that you have your smoking jacket on as well.
A very nice linen smoking jacket brought back from Cuba.
Beautiful. From the Partagas factory.
From the Partagas factory, yes.
So let's see here. We have actually some cigar. We have a cigar question actually that just came in about top five cigars from Cigar Journal. I'm not sure when this ranking is from, but looks like number one on this list is the Davidoff Nicaragua Robusto AT. Second is the Monte Cristo number 2. Third is the Diamond Crown Julius Caesar Toro. Number 4 is the Olivia Series 5 Melanio Churchill. 5 is the Cohiba Classico Esplendidos. So I believe the question was about him favoring the Monte 2, which came out second after the Davidoff Nicaragua. Any thoughts on that?
A lot of cigars will depend on your own taste and whether you like a stronger cigar or whether you want a more milder cigar with a milder smoke. The Davidoff tends to be a more milder cigar. The Monte number 2 is a more traditional Cuban style cigar. The Davidoff is a Nicaraguan. The number 3 cigar I've not had. Number 4 and number 5 I've had, and both are very nice.
I believe you did have was it the box of the Cohiba Esplendidos?
Yeah, a couple of boxes of the Esplendidos. They're aging quite nicely. We either smoke them when we first get them, or we age them for several years. They smoke very well.
I believe you got all the boxes from the local cigar store, didn't you? Or you were one of the few that got them.
Yes.
Perfect. So, I understand that you're at a pretty interesting function today. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Today we were at a medieval festival held here that involved jousting. I was not jousting.
Okay.
But we were just watching various people from around the world who've come in to display their armor and their horse abilities and abilities with the lance.
So, I for those who didn't catch our first podcast, we were just going over a very quick bio of Dr. Jim and his different levels of interest, and ancient armor and weaponry was one of them. So, did you bring anything with you, or did you have anything to kind of help with the props?
Today we were nice to 10th century Vikings.
Hmm.
Lower ranking, dressed in handmade linen outfits with handmade leather shoes and various accoutrements necessary to portray that level. But at this festival, you can be of any sort of following. There was LARPers there. There was people who are or sword aficionados. There were people who are involved in the Society of Creative Anachronism and various other groups that are just into more medieval dancing and festivals.
Interesting. So was there any wine there?
Today it was mainly... I think the Vikings had mead.
What's mead? What is that?
Mead is a honey wine, probably the most ancient of wines. In fact, probably the early beers were probably made from honey and grains. But mead is a wine made specifically from honey. It's actually can be tough to actually ferment because of the high sugar content, but makes a very nice light wine.
Interesting. Have you? Is there a lot of people that drink mead these days?
I don't know if you can buy it at many places, but you can certainly make your own. There are a lot of kits for making mead.
Have you ever made mead?
I've made several versions of mead, depending on the flavors, depending on the type of flowers that the bees were feeding on, or the type of areas that were in there, whether it was sunflower or dandelion. It imparts different tastes. And one can make all the way up from regular strength mead to double honey mead. But if you go into the very high honey and sugar levels, you have to go to champagne yeasts and get it to actually start to ferment. And sometimes you have to start with a half strength and work your way up to a high strength to get it to actually ferment. If you do make those types, they become very gassy in the sense that they will, you really need to put them in proper, almost champagne type bottles because they were more regular bottles.
Wow.
Mm. So how is the wine that you're drinking now?
The wine we're drinking right now is a nice ruby red. It has a nice black fruit. It has cherry, blackberry, some leather and cocoa flavors to it, and a very nice aftertaste.
So, seeing as we always have cigars with our wine, is wine your favorite beverage to have with cigars, or do you prefer scotch, or nothing at all?
I'm more into the wines. We do have a lot of scotch with cigars also, but I find if you're doing testing, if one has a bit of scotch in what is drinking and not just tasting it for taste testing, then your taste buds change very quickly.
You kind of lose your sensibilities a little quicker.
Yes.
I want to ask you about a story. Last podcast we talked about a cruise ship and that big bottle of Camus that was on the boat. But on another cruise that you were on for one of your medical conventions, you were with a bunch of gentlemen that were testing your knowledge to see if you were worthy of sitting at the table. Can you tell us a little bit about that that evening and kind of how that all unfolded?
We were at the convention, and several of the family members, a large family that were together, had brought in special cases of special wine to be on the ship, and several of the younger fellows in the group were lawyers and liked to grill people on their wine knowledge.
Okay.
Luckily, I got very lucky and was given a port, which was very easy to tell.
Okay.
And so I did very well. If it was on some of more of the European wines, in Canada, we do not get a lot. We don't get a lot of the finer European wines, and there's a lot of varieties that we would not see here. So it would be harder for us to sort of do taste testing against that. We see more of the American, Canadian, and Australian wines than we do a lot of the French, the higher-end French wines, or regular French wines.
So what kind of questions were they asking you? You must have had more than just port.
Afterwards, once I passed, I could have whatever I wanted.
Okay.
To sort of figure out what this wine is.
Do you remember what kind of wines you had that evening?
We were drinking mainly reds from France.
Okay.
And then later was into Bollinger champagne with sushi.
Ooh, very nice. So it was a good evening.
It was a very good evening.
Interesting. And are you still keeping in touch with some of those fellows?
Yes, we do. Yeah. On a regular basis, we have wine and food tasting evenings, where we have different wines with different courses of the meal, and everybody contributes to the evening.
So what is your, speaking of meals, what is your favorite meal to have with a nice glass of red?
Steak.
Very easy.
Cooked.
Medium rare. It's got to be pink on the inside. And it's just a small steak. It doesn't have to be a large steak, but I like the thicker steaks so they can be pinker on the inside.
Yeah. Steaks have to be a little bit pink.
Yeah. Seared on both sides. Nicely done. And it's almost like doing ahi tuna where they've got that nice sear on the outside and a nice pink on the inside.
Yeah.
That's what I like.
That's perfect. Okay, so it looks like we have another question actually that's come in, and it has to do with Sauvignon Blancs and the grape varietal that goes into making them, and how they've become popular outside of France, and that they've been spreading, the popularity of the Sauvignon Blanc has been spreading all the way out to New Zealand and in some cases beyond. Being as it's the summer right now, and white wine's nice to have sometimes on a nice hot sunny day. Any thoughts on Sauvignon Blanc?
A nice chilled Sauvignon Blanc is very good, especially for when you're having an appetizer or having your salads on a very hot day around the pool, or just when it's hot. It's crisp and it's light, and it just sort of refreshes everything if you're having a good Sauvignon Blanc. It is spread from France to now New Zealand and Australia. New Zealand being a big proponent of it now, but it's also in Canada and the United States. But the major push right now is mainly here in Canada, seems to be the New Zealand grape varietals, ones like Spy Valley, and then we get into some of the ones from Australia, like Kim Crawford, and the ones from the Marlborough region of Australia, all of which are quite crisp, quite tart, lots of grapefruit in them. They tend to be a little stronger and sharper than the French varieties, but they're all becoming very popular at the present time, as people are having more than just straight red wines.
Right. Any favorites?
Mine presently would be, I really like Kim Crawford, and I really like Villa Maria.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's sort of taste by taste.
Right. It's always nice to try different wines and kind of test them against each other. Speaking of testing, switching gears a bit to Scotch. Every now and then you have some Scotch tasting evenings, and I don't know how scientific they are, considering you're all a bunch of doctors, but can you tell us a little bit about your Scotch tasting evenings?
They're more anesthetic than anything. What we do, basically, a group of people get together, there's usually about five or six doctors, sometimes more, and everybody brings their bottle of the month. And what we basically do is we all have a glass of each person's Scotch, which they found and brought. And at the end, we decide which one is the best. And that's the bottle that we kill the first.
And then how about the other bottles? What happens to those? They get brought
back?
They
usually disappear sooner or later also. By the time we're going home in the evening, everybody's going home by cab.
Safety first. Do you any scotches that you recall that were good that came out of some of these tastings?
Glenrothes. We had a bottle of 1985 Glenrothes.
That's a name in the Scotch world that I don't think a lot of people are very familiar with. But
yeah.
I had it as well, and I believe I have sampled the bottle in question, and it was quite good.
Yes. And we did get corrected on how to pronounce it,
right?
By several of the doctors who had trained in Scotland and Edinburgh.
And we were referring to it, I think, as Glenrothes for a while, and it's Glenrothes.
Glenrothes.
It's not a Scotch you see on the shelves very much. At least not where we are.
No. At that time, we had to buy it out of Ontario. Now it's now available in Winnipeg.
And that's in 85.
85 was a special year, a single cask.
And speaking about that, unique kind of scotches, you have in your collection, and I know you don't have very much of it left, but you have a very interesting scotch that was, it's black almost.
Yeah, there was one scotch that was called Loch Dhu, which was actually a scotch that I believe was a mismanufacture by one of the major scotch makers, and somehow they turned the whole brew a black color. It was quite strong, had a very molasses strong taste to it, but was very good, went down very well. It's now no longer available because it was only a one-off. If one finds a bottle, we were able to buy bottles at about $40 a bottle. Now, if you can find them, they're £400 or £500 a bottle.
Wow. And how'd you pick one of those up? Like, what made you buy a black bottle of scotch? How long ago was that?
Just because it was interesting looking.
Like, that's good enough. And when was that?
Oh, this has been about, about 10 years ago now. I don't even know what company it came from originally and how the processing occurred. But one person in the family killed almost the whole bottle.
Oh, no. Is she still alive? Or he?
She's doing very well.
Okay. It wasn't one of those assisted deaths?
No. They were well anesthetized.
Interesting. Well, I think we're probably getting to the end of our podcast here, so thanks for tuning in. Thank you, Dr. Jim, for your time. We hope to have another podcast for you soon. And again, if you guys have any questions, you send them our way. We really appreciate all of the support. And again, we apologize for the snorting dog, but she's okay. So we will talk to you all next time. Thank you very much.